Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Today, we welcome back to the studios of CBS Interactive, Launch Management Group PR consultant and former Mumbrella deputy editor, Camille Alacon.
Hi, Tim.
As well as the newest kid on the Mumbo block, new deputy editor, Robin Hicks.
Hello, Tim.
It's like the time evil Superman met good Superman. This week, getting techie at AdTech, 2011, the year of mobile. Have you heard that one before? Can you bear it? Ambush marketing. Bracing for a billboard backlash. Wankers not welcome. And Jennifer Aniston's Aqua Virus. So, AdTech was in Sydney this week. If you hear any weariness in my voice or Robin's, then it's because, as we record this, it was the AdTech party the night before. Let's hear a little bit about the conference from Chairman Ian McDonald.
I've just sat in the mobile session and there were some great stats in there. We saw some interesting things like women are twice as likely to share content on a mobile phone, which I didn't know before. So I think AdTech's all about learning and getting to the new stuff. So I'm here learning like everybody else.
Now, the opening keynote was Brad Jakeman. Yeah. One of his messages, I guess, was if you're a marketer, if you're not marketing a good product, you're doomed, which is all very well for him with Call of Duty being one yes. of the products that he launches. But what are the lessons for marketers, do you think, who maybe don't have a great product?
Look, I mean, I think that's a great question. And obviously, everyone doesn't have an amazing product. I mean, literally, he was able to unmarket his products. He didn't really launch a demo before, and the hype around it actually served part of the marketing. I think it's brands that don't have such a strong product. They've got to work a lot harder. They've got to have a better strategy. But I did think that the messages around consumer engagement were really important and getting the people that do believe in your product to actually stand up for you.
So as usual at AdTech, the debate on the death of television was at the forefront. Brad Jakeman is the chief creative officer of Activision, which is the marketer behind gaming blockbuster Call of Duty. And one of the arguments that he made in the session that I sat in on the opening morning was that TV networks should pay to run great ads alongside their TV shows because it's good content. He did kind of admit that, you know, maybe the networks wouldn't buy that. But he also made the argument that where TV content is good, TV's not dead. Camille?
Look, I see where he's coming from, obviously, but it's never going to happen. But essentially what he's saying isn't anything new. You create compelling content and consumers will be engaged equals increased awareness and or sales. The reality is that there are different types of, we're talking about just TV here, as he was saying. The reality is that lots of different types of TV ads with different functions. So you always have your DRTV or direct response television, your tele shopping, telemarketing, and your brand power ads. And in those cases, they have their place. TV networks are not going to be paying for them. But in terms of what he's saying, no, you're not always going to make, you know, award-winning, beautifully crafted ads that also increase awareness. They have their place, and so do the direct response ads.
There were a couple of points, actually, where I would have dearly have loved to have debated with him because, yeah, one of the points he was making was, hey, the problem with this modern world is because consumers are really well informed, you have to just have great products. You shouldn't market bad products, which is kind of all very well unless you happen to work for a company that makes bad products and you've got to market them. Robin, your take?
Well, I think, yeah, consumers are certainly looking for more from advertising these days. And I did wonder, there's a suggestion made in the comments stream on the story that perhaps the problem is with ad formats. Perhaps there should be more innovation in that space to cater for consumers that these days that want to snack on advertising rather than put up with a 60-second or 30-second or perhaps 15-second ad. There should be more innovation in
Blipverts.
Yes.
I remember, I can't remember where the conversation came up. I remember someone had to find out what the shortest rate card buy they could make for ads. And I think the answer is 5 seconds in Australia. I presume you can negotiate other things, but at the moment you can buy airtime in chunks as small as 5 seconds.
Right. Would that be too short, though, do you think? And literally, you know, perhaps that's the equivalent of a screen grab.
I seem to remember, and I can't remember if I saw it at Cannes or maybe DNAD, there were some examples of, like, you know, little mini dramas in 5 seconds. You know, it's like, you know, son, I'm not your dad. this drama brought to you by, sort of thing, you know, which was quite a nice way of breaking it up. And you could sort of, you can see where you make a virtue of the amount of time, but if the ad isn't about the short amount of time, I don't know whether you could make it work more widely.
Yeah, it sounds similar to a format they have in Japan, where literally you have a celebrity who screams the brand repeatedly for 2 seconds and that's it. And next commercial.
Now, is that push or pull advertising, I wonder? But then you still have the likes of the Super Bowl ads, which is it 3 million for a 30-second spot? So clearly those advertisers are happy to put out the cash.
And that becomes anticipated content as well. So it's a double win for the network because, you know, one of the things people tune in is to see the Super Bowl ads.
Yeah.
And of course, again, one of the arguments that somebody made on the comment thread was the fact that actually what you're buying is the means of taking your content to an audience. So, you know, that's the thing your content hasn't got. And even when we talk about something, you know, it's amazing, it had 5 million views in, you know, the first 3 weeks or whatever it is. 5 million in terms of TV reach, you could buy that with a medium-sized budget. Next. So this is the year of mobile.
So every 12 months, especially at AdTech, we hear that year is going to be the year for mobile. The year passes and we find that in fact it wasn't. But Fairfax Digital's general manager, media, Jane Huxley, has made the brave claim that no, in fact, 2011 is the year for mobile. She's based this on the rise in consumption of their news content on mobiles. And in fact, Nielsen Online stats say mobile browsers of Fairfax News grew a whopping 762% in 12 months to January this year. Camille, why hasn't the year of the mobile come to fruition?
Robin, it was never going to be the year of the mobile yesterday, today or tomorrow. It's a nice catchy little line that the industry, we love to just pull out there in conferences, in headlines of articles. But the reality is it was always going to be and always will be a gradual growth because there are several perspectives here. Obviously, we've got the consumer take-up of mobile, the mobile internet, increased sales in the smartphones. Then you've got the media companies, the media owners then looking to create more tailored content for the mobile platform. And then you've got the agencies, you know, trialing, experimenting with different new ad initiatives. So it's always going to be a bit of a regular growth. So for me, it is the year of the mobile. It's been the year of the mobile for a long time, but it's not its year. It's just that it does actually matter. It does count, and it's here to stay.
Yeah, I look, but I think the first year I started writing about media was 2002, and I'm pretty sure we carried an analysis piece in the magazine I worked on then with the headline, "Will next year be the year of mobile?" So to a certain extent, I do disagree with Camille a bit in that it does feel to me that, you know, maybe this is the year that mobile truly goes mainstream, you know, rather than just kind of trendy early adopters. And if that's what we define as the year of mobile, then to me, this is it.
Mm. Indeed. Someone made the comment at AdTech yesterday that it was the mid-90s that the internet went mainstream. But when it went mainstream for advertisers is another matter. And I think that's what I meant in the story that I wrote, that, you know, when does mobile become mainstream for advertisers? When does it really register in their media plan? What's the critical mass? What's the tipping point? I think that's what I was referring to in the story.
And also, I suppose the question is, do you always make a mobile buy? Or does it, you know, for instance, you know, I pick up my iPhone or whatever and, you know, I look at a website and I can see the ads. Now, it so happens I'm on a mobile device, but those ads were sold to the website just as ads on the website. So I wonder whether the advertiser actually needs to get into the new mindset, you know, because there was almost this thinking on, you know, tiny little ads for mobile editions and stuff. But with, you know, things like the iPad, people effectively just replicated the surfing experience. So do you think we actually need mobile specific advertising at all?
It's an add-on, isn't it? I mean, I think that, one, it's definitely an add-on, but two, then you have the sexy things that come out, like the QR codes that you're seeing around the world. But I just don't think it's ever going to be integral unless it's a really kind of niche campaign, but that will just be part of a smaller marketing mix. It'll never be integral, to my mind.
Well, it's interesting when a discipline eventually becomes sucked into the mainstream. I mean, a story that we ran this week looked at Nielsen combining two of its media surveys, its media consumption surveys, they finally decided that, hey, now is the time that social media has gone mainstream, and to tie that into a broader survey on online. So it's interesting that tipping point, suddenly Nielsen decided in its infinite wisdom that social media is mature enough to be combined as part of the online landscape.
And the thing is, if they left it another year, at the moment it's like, oh good, yep, you know, right timing. If they left it another year before doing that, they'd have seemed like hopeless fuddy-duddies for carrying on so long with the two separate, probably.
Next, stop. This is an ambush.
I loves me a good bit of ambush marketing. So we got a release on Monday announcing that Man vs. Wild's Bear Grylls has signed a deal with Discovery Networks, and Nissan to be the face of its X-Trail vehicle. Discovery Networks are the ones who make Bear Grylls show, which then goes out on Discovery and also on SBS here in Australia. Anyway, the next day after that, we also had a tip-off that a Jeep ad that had been running for just a few days, featuring the front of the Jeep four-wheel drive's grills, had been forced off the Discovery Channel because it conflicted with Nissan. The 15-second spot showed the Jeep going through some water in slow motion with the caption, "The Real Bear Grylls." Now, it's probably worth stressing that Bear Grylls in that context was spelled B-A-R-E and Grylls G-R-I-L-L-S. Overreacting to have it pulled, do you reckon, Robin?
Well, I think, yeah, I think this is fair play. I think it's fair enough. I think it's a good ambush marketing campaign. I didn't think the creative work was particularly strong, but hey, it was done in the best tradition of ambush. It was quick. It was cheap. It was a repurposed ad. They just shortened and slowed down the ad, and it was obviously effective. We picked the story up. I gather other media did as well.
But we don't look at other media.
No, of course not. And we hear from Discovery that Bear Grylls himself complained about the ad.
I was going to ask you, was it him?
Which adds to the PR fizz of it.
So he was sitting on the rail track and picked up a copy of MX and thought, hang on, this isn't on.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. And I think, it was a good... It came, according to Maxis, the media planning and buying agency behind the campaign, it came out of a very small tactical budget. So it wasn't as if they spent a lot of money on it. So I think, it worked.
Well, declaration of interest for me, we handle the PR and comms for MCN, which does the ad sales for Discovery Networks, which obviously they broker the deal with Bear Grylls and Nissan. So I can't really comment directly. In terms of what Chrysler has done, though, I mean, I think it's interesting that it's a month in to the job, Cummins Ross, their new agency, that they've got on the front foot and done something interesting. Because if I recall correctly, Chrysler Jeep spot was awarded a Turkey of the Year ad not too long ago from Umbrella.
That was back in the days. Was it
2009? It wasn't that long ago.
I'm trying to remember who the agency was then. Was it Clemenger BBDO Melbourne?
Potentially.
Is that right?
Yes.
You're trying to be nice. Those were some bad ads.
It's a bit different for Chrysler Jeep, which is good and it's interesting, for the category.
It's a good brand fit. As Maxis was saying, that it was a cheeky, irreverent stunt, which matches nicely with the brand of Jeep.
Well, next, bracing for a billboard backlash.
You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast. For more on all these stories, go to mumbrella.com.au. We published a story this week on oOh!media's decision to pull a billboard ad for a betting company which made reference to a rugby league star's alleged lewd act with a canine. The BetStar ad read, "Raiders do dogs again," a pun on a clash between the Canberra's Raiders and the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs. oOh! Have said it's the sixth piece of artwork they've had to reject this year. Tim, obviously oOh! Are going to lengths to adhere to the guidelines of the ASB, Advertising Standards Bureau, but is there something more outdoor advertising companies should be doing to regulate?
I think the issue that the advertising industry is facing at the moment, particularly the outdoor industry, is changing community concerns over advertising. And, outdoor is one of those intrusive mediums where you don't have a choice whether you see it or not. You can't switch it off, stop the kids from seeing it like you would with television. Similarly, you often hear about it with, parents on the school run with the radio on, and then they hear the, AMI longer lasting sex ad or whatever is again one that often seems to generate complaints. So there's that sort of backdrop. You've also got the fact that we've got more and more kind of interest from politicians. So we got this sort of investigation going on in Parliament at the moment, these hearings about whether there should be more legislation. So of course the industry wants to keep self-regulation, which is what the Advertising Standards Bureau is all about. So what I think one of the things we're seeing at the moment is the industry going out of its way to being seen to regulate itself. And actually, just this week, you know, one of the stories that will be up on Mumbrella by the time people are listening to this is about the Advertising Standards Board going back to a decision it made 5 years ago and deciding an ad was okay, going back and overturning that decision and actually saying, no, it's no longer okay as public taste is changing. So, you know, we're very much seeing the industry trying to be seen to be the responsible voice that doesn't need outside help, interference, regulation, whatever you want to call it.
Do you feel, just a point on the sensitivity of Australian consumers, do you think that they are generally becoming more sensitive or just more willing to complain?
I mean, I absolutely love reading the reports from the Advertising Standards Bureau because they put the person's original complaint. And, you know, you can generally, it's a nice little game actually to diagnose which particular disorder each person has who makes the complaint. Not everybody who complains, of course, but a lot of them are clearly, you know, people who wouldn't fall within the normal framework of sort of, you know, an average member of the public. But of course, all it takes is one complaint to trigger investigation. So those are the kind of extremes. It kind of does strike me there that maybe the public as a whole, the tastes are changing a bit. So things that, you know, were acceptable before becoming less so. We've seen the controversy this week over KFC and Stuart McGill, the cricketer, saying that he refused to do a KFC ad, which he was obliged to do in his contract with Cricket Australia because he didn't approve of promoting fast food. And I think certainly in kind of, you know, speedy service food, as the industry likes to call itself, that's one area where public taste, I think, is changing.
On the other hand, do you feel that perhaps brands are too eager to get talked about? Do you think there's a sense in that as well? The ad in question was created in-house. It wasn't as if it was a creative that wanted to get famous quickly.
To me, the biggest, most annoying group of the lot on that, there's a company called Wicked Camper Vans who, I don't know if they're the most complained about brand or the most findings upheld against them, but they've been back in front of the Ad Standards Bureau again this week. Just really offensive slogans and messages on their vans and on their signage. And you see their responses, the Advertising Standards Bureau, and they're just flicking two fingers up at them. They just think the whole thing's a huge joke because they realise that actually for small brands, other than not, you know, not being run in other media or whatever, there are no sanctions that can be had against them. So
there's that question of self-regulation. I mean, isn't the Australian Medical Institute the one is the most complained about for their making sex last longer?
But at least the issue with that is they, when the rulings are made, they obey and take the things down because they know that the billboard, you know, the major billboard owners would take them down if they don't.
Yeah.
Where you've got an issue with, you know, miscreants like Wicked Camper Vans is they own the media themselves. Mm. So, that you know, there can be nothing that stops them.
According to O Media, the brands that the biggest culprits of this sort of advertising are religious groups, which is fairly sinister. That recruiting new young followers, that apparently are the brands that are most complained about or taken down by outdoor ad companies.
Well, one of the big controversies both here and in the UK was over one of the kind of the atheism organisations asking the question. Mm-hmm. I think it was a slogan with something along the lines of "Don't worry, there is no God, so stop worrying about it," or something like that, which was denied permission in the UK, if I remember rightly. And I think a similar attempt here in Australia was also denied as well. You're looking like fully believe me there.
There was a bit of a stash in the UK, but I think it was actually a bit of a one-for-one on some outdoor ads between a Christian group and an atheist group. It was actually quite amusing.
Next, wankers aren't welcome.
Now, one of the more interesting call for applicants we've seen, marketing consultancy StepChange, has made a video explaining that it does not want, quote, Adland wankers applying for a job at their firm. Let's have a listen.
Okay, well, thanks very much for coming in. Obviously, we're really excited about this new role and we're hoping you're going to be a perfect fit for it. Just to get things going, you're currently in planning.
Production.
Management. Very senior management.
I have a fully diversified role that encapsulates a wide range of enterprise responsibilities and client interfacing.
Hey, come on. Really?
Creative? Well, we're really excited about this role because it involves a creative element.
Oh.
Sorry, and also involves you managing a client directly. How do you think you'd handle that role?
Oh, well, I already manage clients. We also want you to explore your creative side.
You mean like come up with ideas?
I'm not permitted to have ideas.
I don't talk to clients.
I suppose you could say I care too much about advertising.
Old wine and young women.
Female clients get a little distracted by my hair.
Well, I see my weaknesses as strengths.
My jawline.
I'm passionate about everything.
Oh, it's the whole package, just... Love's a pretty strong word.
Advertising tells people what's cool. And where to buy fridges.
I've actually identified 17 core affection touchstones.
Jingles.
And I've actually charted those love parameters on this graph. One.
We have to free ourselves from these architectural conventions.
Jingles. Do-ba-a.
17. Antoine?
Oh, sorry, am I supposed to talk now?
So Camille, you've seen both sides of the coin, coming from journalism and now in PR, and having had to have plenty of dealings with people in advertising. Is our industry full of wankers?
It certainly is. I don't think there's any question about that.
Are they likeable wankers?
Oh, absolutely. They're lovable characters and wankers, you know, and some of them not so much. Some of them hide them a bit better. Some of them, you know, it's part of the show. It's part of the, you know, the bravado, and it suits the industry. So, you know, you humor them.
I think my favorite bit from the video was the creative. Said, I've got to go away and think. And then the next shot is him playing alone on the foosball table.
On the foosball table. Or the account manager who was, we're really excited about this role because it involves a creative element. And then he just gets up and goes to leave.
Yeah, so he looks all sort of panicked. Yeah, so the idea being that creatives can't handle clients and suits can't think creatively.
Shum, I was interested to hear what you guys think about the most unlikable Adland character. Is it a planner? Is it a creative? Is it a suit?
I think it's about individuals rather than a particular role, isn't it? I mean, it's probably like any profession. You know, doctors hate nurses and nurses hate doctors.
Really?
It's probably, yeah, I used to edit a hospital doctor. Man, those doctors don't like those nurses.
Don't they shag each other?
Well, there is some of that, but, you know, but it's probably hate sex.
Okay.
but what you do get is the nurses tend to work very strict shifts, you know, and they're very much about going home on time. It's how the doctors would perceive it. Well, they have to work, you know, hours and through the night. The nurses would perceive the doctors as pompous and arrogant and not very caring about the patient. So it's that yin and yang thing. You know, it's much like, you know, media reps, you know, sales reps and media agencies. You know, there's always like that tension between the two sides. And I'm sure similarly within the advertising agency, it's, you know, your account management are no fun and, you know, they bring the bad news to the creatives that the clients don't like the idea. And the creatives are, you know, kind of think, well, they must have failed to sell the idea properly. And the account management people see the creatives as spoilt children. There's a great book called, there's a couple. There's one called E, which, and then I think E Squared was the other one about life inside an advertising agency, which is a great read.
What do you think this ad says about the sort of people who are drawn to advertising and drawn to the industry?
Shy.
Shy, yeah. Well, I suppose it's that nature versus nurture thing, isn't it? Does the industry make these people or does it attract, you know, wankers? I stumbled on it the other day. Do you remember a few years back, B&T, and I don't know if it was on your time on B&T, they had the headline Wankers Incorporated.
No.
Yeah, it was... Do you know, the only reason I stumbled across it was somebody sent me an old cutting that happened to be on the same page, and it was an angry letter from what was then the Advertising Federation on how this really did a disservice to the industry. So it's been a long, you know, this one has been a long and protracted debate.
I just want to know, where was the digital geek, the digital guru,
Yes,
Tim?
It could do with a digital guru, actually.
How would you describe one?
A digital guru. Well, I guess the thing is, it's the social media guru, isn't it?
Well, it's not anymore, isn't it? Isn't it
yeah,
now?
Yeah, SMEG, SMG, social media guru.
How would they look like?
Yeah, well,
logo T-shirt.
Yeah, logo T-shirt. Possibly something about Twitter. Possibly something about Google or Facebook on their T-shirt. Mm. Who'd wear a Google T-shirt?
Oh, well, I'd also wondered what, you know, if Step Change doesn't hire any of these sort of wankers, what sort of people work at Step Change?
Yeah, they may struggle a bit, actually. Yes, that was one of the comments as well. They may struggle to hire those people. Well, next, Julia's carbon tax ad campaign.
One of this year's political controversies is proving to be the government's carbon tax. Prime Minister Julia Gillard isn't ruling out an ad campaign to sell it to the public. Tim, will it work?
No, of course not. It's the sort of thing that would be hugely controversial, the actual advertising itself. It will look to the public like a massive waste of money to be spending on effectively political propaganda. That will become the story. Huge backlash on talkback radio. Massive debacle.
Hands down, there's no other way it's going to come. It's just going to be the same as the mining tax, and it's also the question of wasting money in terms of advertising spend. In the guise of it's education, educating the public, it's not going to work.
But still interesting for agencies. If it's a national campaign, presumably there'll be a lot of spend. What are the sort of agencies do you think in the running to land this sort of business?
The way it works for government stuff is there's a roster of agencies, which you actually have to jump through a few hoops to get on the roster in the first place. And then they tend to decide on a sort of case-by-case basis which agency gets the work. Generally, they try and fly under the radar. The agencies know they're really not allowed to talk about it. So they kind of treat any publicity with a great deal of caution. But hard client. Difficult work, lots of sign-offs, but they pay well.
Yeah. I don't know if – would you want this gig if you're an agency, if you're on the roster? I don't know.
Yeah, is it a poison chalice? Well-paying, but it's going to get slammed. Isn't it sort of win-lose?
It's probably like any political advertising, isn't it? I mean, I can't even remember who did the advertising for the, you know, for the Liberal Party, for instance, in the last election. It wasn't amazing advertising, but I don't think that was what lost in the election.
Next, Jennifer Aniston's Aquavirus.
So finally, lots of kudos to the team behind Smartwater in the States, who put together this viral gem.
Hi, I'm Jen Aniston, and I'm here to talk to you about Smartwater. But in this day and age, apparently I can't just do that, can I? Can't just tell you that Smartwater is the smartest, best-tasting water that's out there. I have to make a video, apparently, that... turns into a virus.
Viral.
So,
we need the video to go viral.
Right, sorry, viral. Thank you. This is why I have these three lovely internet boys here to help me. So, apparently, well, animals are huge online. Do we have animals? Oh, you're so sweet. Can you say, I love Smartwater?
Oh, no, out of there. God.
I love Smartwater.
Rachel, I love your hair.
Okay, that's enough. Let's try to think of something else. Okay, well, that's adorable. Look at you guys. Look at them. Wait, what are you doing? No. No dirty dancing, babies.
It'll get us more views.
It'll also get us arrested. Babies, stop that. You really can't do that yet. Where's the mommy?
Full on double rainbow all the way across the sky.
What's going on?
Oh my God.
Hi, honey, are you okay?
It's so beautiful.
Come on, let's get you up. Here, have some smart water. What did they do to you? Anything else? What's left?
Oh my God, Jen Aniston, I have been in love with you forever. Oh.
Sorry, apparently that's worth about 100,000 hits.
Not for me.
God, is it? Is it hot in here? I'm fired. Well, in closing, I would like to say that Smart Water is the purest tasting water there is. What are we going to call this video?
Jen Aniston's sex tape?
I love it.
So the clip you're hearing there is Jennifer Aniston's 101 introduction on how to create a viral video. It seems to have worked. 2 days, more than 2 million views. That's going pretty well. Just knocking off each of the internet meme cliches, Camille.
Yeah, I looked this morning. It's over 3 days now. It's 2.7 million. So it's chugging along quite nicely, isn't it? I was quite impressed. I was impressed that Jen Aniston's finally done something right. I mean, it cracked me up. And, you know, speaking about the actual, from a brand perspective, marketing perspective, it's a good brand fit. Water and wholesome, clean-cut Jennifer Aniston. So, you know, makes sense.
Jennifer Aniston's sex tape, as they described it.
As they described it, as just the only kind of sex tape she would have, potentially. But, no, I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too. I think it started well, but is it too long for a viral? I think it went on a little bit too long.
Yeah, it was about 2.5 minutes or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, which is pretty long for a viral. But and there are bits of it I didn't quite like. The Dirty Dancing Babies, I thought was fairly, that was an awkward moment. but yeah, and also that I'm not sure that a self-conscious ad about a viral, talking about a viral, is that new? I'm not sure that it is. But
I suppose the question is, does it, in order, so long as it's getting talked about and it's getting views, does it matter that it's not new? But my other question is, 2.5 million in the scheme of things, that's not many American consumers, for instance.
Yeah, and obviously it's viral, so it's global. Interesting to see where those numbers are picked up and where, indeed, Smart Water is a horrible name for a brand of water, where they're being sold. Are they hitting shelves in Australia yet?
Yeah, I think it's branded. Now, I'm not sure if it's a sort of sub-brand, because is this a sister brand of Glasso mineral water, or is this an enemy brand?
I don't know. I would say it wouldn't be the same because they're not called Smart Water. It would be Glasso.
Yeah,
Glasso.
I'm not a fan of the old Glasso water. They're the ones who, I'm pretty sure they're the experiential ones who, if you find yourself in a beauty spot, then they're the ones who scream up with loudspeakers and, you know, tend to hand out free water. Free coloured water.
What's wrong with Smart Water anyway?
I don't know. Perhaps it's different. I mean, compared to, it's not a Volvic or an Evian or a Dasani, is it? I mean, it's different, but it's just odd. It's water. How can water be smart? I'm not quite sure. And the strap line, smart because it's made that way. It just doesn't really mean anything.
Well, that is all we have time for today. Special thanks go to my co-hosts, Launch Manager and Group PR Consultant Camille Alacon.
Thank you.
And Mumbrella's Deputy Editor Robin Hicks.
Thanks, Tim.
The Mumbrella cast was recorded at the studios of CBS Interactive. Production was by Alice Terlikovsky. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.